What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Dynasty Diehards. This week on the show, we have NFL news and notes, and we're going to talk about this rookie class of quarterbacks and running backs. We're going to give you some deeper sleepers that you need to be paying attention to in your rookie drafts coming up, folks. Man, that drum hits so hard in that intro. I love it. Gets you stoked, gets you excited. Something we're excited about is Dynasty Format Fantasy Football. If you couldn't tell from the name, Dynasty Diehards, it's what we do here. This is your first time watching. Make sure you subscribe to the channel here at Razzball. Don't want to miss any of our fantastic content here. Follow us on Twitter at FFDinoDiehards, and then you can find me and John on Twitter as well, at Nate Palvo and at John Helmkamp. John, how are you doing today, my friend?
I'm good. It honestly took me a really long time to realize that both of our Twitter handles are just our names. I like that. It's really clean and simple. It makes it easy for the people. So if you want to find us on Twitter, you just put the at sign in front of our names. And that's it.
You know, it's been a journey for me. I started out as at Jenate Jack because me, Jen, and Jackson, and Jen and I have this, we came up with a team name when we were first dating, Jenate.
Love it.
So we just go by Jenate, right? Then one day it was pointed out to me, it's like, that looks like Jen 8 Jack. Like Jen 8 Jack.
There's also a lot of like Janet Jackson vibes involved in that.
Sure. But, you know, I've ditched that now. It's just my plain old name, which I don't know, dude. The Paul Vote part's a little hard for people sometimes.
You know, my OG handle, right? You remember what it was?
No, Dynasty Beard, right?
Yeah, dude, at Dynasty Beard. That was it. And then I decided that I wanted to be fancy and just go to the straight up name so that it was easy for people. But sure. I do miss the Dynasty Beard names. I still keep that as my sleeper handle.
Yes, I am well aware. Yes,
we gotta leak together. So yeah, it's fun fun keeping the Dynasty Beard alive a little bit.
Yeah, well, all this banter is fun, but folks, I think it's time to get into some NFL news and notes. I wonder how much that confuses people on the audio version if you're listening to the audio podcast. We have a whole graphic for it if you're curious. So if you're curious what it looks like, tune into the YouTube show on the Razzball YouTube channel and keep downloading our episode audio, please. We love that as well. So, John, it hasn't been an especially busy week for news, but we've had some interesting stuff kind of pop up. The first thing I want to talk about, so Michael Florio of NFL Network is reporting that the Patriots are shopping Mac Jones. Now, first of all, I don't know that there's a team that's going to – I mean, does anybody need a quarterback right now like Mac Jones? I mean, is he an upgrade to a team that might be looking – could you see him going to, say, Atlanta or somewhere like that?
I think that's the real conversation. There's teams that need quarterbacks, yeah. Does Michael McCorkle Jones – and I will take every opportunity to use his full name that I can – does Michael McCorkle Jones actually possess an upgrade over the current quarterback situations for a lot of the teams out there that could be looking at quarterback? I don't really know that he does. I don't know that they're going to get, you know, any sort of compensation for him that actually makes sense. So to me, it doesn't really compute. I'm sure that dangling him out there, maybe you'll get someone that's interested, but I can't imagine the compensation is going to be particularly big. I don't really see.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine so either. I mean, we're going into our third season of him at quarterback. I don't know that I'm necessarily out on Mac Jones, but if you're not in super flex, there's no reason for you to have him rostered, right? Like,
no, not
he's
at
not
all.
A top 12 quarterback, and he's never going to hit that ceiling as much as I was somebody who really was a truther on Mac Jones and wanted to see that, but it's not going to happen. Now, here's my second question pertaining to this. John, do you think this is a sign that the Patriots are in on trying to get Lamar Jackson, or is that just smoke?
I don't see Lamar Jackson, but I have actually started to see some conversations around Aaron Rodgers. I've been seeing that in a couple places that they could be interested in Rodgers from, you know, credible sources, not just, you know, random people on Twitter coming up with ideas. But there's multiple people that have potentially linked Rodgers to the Patriots, because everything that's taking place with the Jets is just really at a stalemate. This just keeps dragging out. And the Packers did a great job in structuring Rodgers' contract to give them the flexibility of dragging this conversation out as long as possible. There's no deadline with guaranteed money coming to them, you know, at the start of the new league year and stuff like that. So they have all the flexibility in the world. They go, hey, if we want to wait until, you know, August 27th to pull the trigger on this, we can.
Right.
So maybe the Patriots get involved. Maybe they're willing to throw their hat in the ring. And not only that, but it takes them away from the link team, which is in their division. That'd be really interesting, right? Because it's like the Jets have gone all in on Rodgers, and for the former big brother in the division to become the big brother again in the division by going out and acquiring Rodgers would certainly be interesting. So I'm not saying I'm predicting that to happen, but this thing just keeps dragging out. I don't know what it's going to analyze. I don't know what the situation is. And it sounds like it's going to be the Jets, but I got no idea. We're all just waiting. We're just waiting for something to transpire at this point, and I don't know when that's going to happen.
Well, my best guess is that we see some movement on draft day, more than likely. If we're going to see something before the draft, I don't think that that's very likely. This could be a day one, like the AJ Brown trade, where it's like, oh, whoa, hold on now. That just happened, and now we've got him to the Patriots. I don't know, man. I don't see New England making that big of a commitment to a 39-year-old quarterback, because you're looking at Tom Brady, and they let Tom Brady essentially walk in free agency once he got close to that age, or he was past that age. But do you want to hang your hat on a 39-year-old quarterback in a division where you might not even be the second best team with Aaron Rodgers?
I will say this. If you have Rodgers on that team, their defense is good. I wouldn't say their wide receivers are a whole lot worse than what he's been dealing with for the last couple of years, minus Davante Adams, which obviously is an elite option. But if you tell me that they could potentially go out and acquire Aaron Rodgers, and this is just pipe dream stuff that I'm talking about, right. But let's say the Patriots can get Aaron Rodgers and then also get DeAndre Hopkins from the Cardinals, who are very willing to shop him. You just plug and play both of them into that offense, and suddenly you're cooking, right? You give him the certified weapon that he's going to target 16 times a game or something ridiculous like that. And that defense is good. So I don't know. It doesn't seem like a Bill Belichick thing to do, but at the same time, I think everything post Brady is very new to the Patriots and to Bill Belichick. And I think that they're still trying to figure out how to navigate life without Brady. Mac Jones, I don't think they're sold on. They don't really like the personality that he showed in the locker room and the, you know, fighting with the coaches on the sideline and all that stuff. It seems like things are, you know, kind of rocky there.
Sure.
So if they're not willing to, you know, completely commit to a rebuild, like go all in on just saying, hey, we're going to bench you and go with Bailey Zappi, or we're going to trade you and go with Bailey Zappi and see what happens and, you know, get a better draft pick next year. If they're not willing to do that, maybe they do kick the tires on Rodgers. I don't know. I don't think there's a whole lot that we can say that we expect out of Belichick and the Patriots right now. It's all uncharted territory for them. So it could happen. I don't know. Maybe it does.
So we've got an interesting comment in the chat from friend of the show, Jamie Parag here. And he makes a good point here. Bill Belichick is at the end of his days, so maybe he does want to make one last run at a Super Bowl with a veteran where he's not having to develop someone. And, you know, if you look at it that way, it does make sense. But we know that literally the ball is in the Jets' court at this point. They're the ones who have spoken to Rodgers. They're the ones who have gotten the okay from Rodgers to attempt to acquire him, which that sounds so freaking weird. But I mean, who knows how this is all going to play out? And that's the fun part about all this is we have no idea. You know, we have ideas, of course, but we don't really know what's going to happen because we're not in the front office. But one thing we do know is going to happen, John. Trevor Lawrence is going to be throwing passes to Calvin Ridley in 2023. They had their first throwing session recently, and apparently Trevor Lawrence is super excited about having Calvin Ridley on this team, really enjoyed their session. Now, this is an interesting situation, however, because they've got a loaded pass-catching core. They've got Calvin Ridley. They've got Christian Kirk. They've got Zay Jones, who flashed last season late. And then they've got Evan Ingram, who was an absolute vision, something we wanted to see out of him for so long at tight end. Does Ridley get kind of lost in this room, or is he going to become the alpha?
Man, I think that's a really tough question to answer. Christian Kirk last year comes into the scene. They went out and they gave him a lot of money in free agency. So last year he had 84 receptions for 1,108 yards, 8 touchdowns. Really solid year, very respectable. Calvin Ridley enters the fray here in Jacksonville, and suddenly you're looking at a team that might have one of the best passing games in the NFL, which is really weird to think about in Jacksonville, but they might. So I think that Ridley and Christian Kirk, I think they're probably going to finish the year with really similar stat lines. I don't think that one is going to become this dominant, you know, top six fantasy option, and the other is left in the churn as a middling wide receiver two. I think both of them could end up with stats kind of right around what Kirk put up last year, which would be great for Ridley. If you've been holding on to Ridley, or you acquired him, you know, in his season loss to the suspension, and that's what he gives you, you've got to be thrilled with that. I think that's great. I don't think that Ridley comes in and becomes this uber dominant wide receiver one, but I think this is only good news for Trevor Lawrence, who showed real steps of growth and maturity last year. He's in an offense where he can flourish. He's got a head coach that believes in him and is good at developing quarterbacks. I think there's a lot of things going right for Lawrence, and this offense could be like legitimately scary, which is
The thing is that they were starting to get to that point at the end of last season. They were starting to put it together without Calvin Ridley. So here's what I'll say. The last time that Ridley was healthy was 2020 for a full season. He missed one game.
Yeah.
He was PPR wide receiver 5. He had 143 targets, and that was in an offense with Julio Jones, who was still mildly productive.
But he was still commanding the attention of defenses. That's the thing. Like, his production might not have been there in the stat line,
but he still did.
Julio Jones. It was still, this is your alpha wide receiver, and defenses are shading to him. So I do have a hard time thinking that Calvin Ridley is ever going to top that season. I don't think he will either.
It's
a huge number for him to put
up. Can you see him? Okay, so in the chat, Jamie, both can be top 5, 15 wide receivers easily. Do you agree or disagree with that statement?
I'm not going to say easily, because it's a really tall task to put two wide receivers in the same offense inside the top 15. It does happen. It happens fairly regularly when you have really explosive offenses. I think that's the ceiling. I think that's the ceiling for this offense. I'd put it at like maybe like 30% to 40% chance that both wide receivers finish in the top 15 in PPR. I think it's definitely doable. But I think that it's a tall task.
Well, the problem I have with it is we've got Travis Etienne, also a very talented pass catcher, has been mentioned in the chat. And you've got Evan Ingram, and you've got Zay Flowers who can contribute. You've got Jamichael Hasty, who is a phenomenal pass catcher and who can plug into that offense should Travis Etienne get hurt. So I don't think both can finish in the top 15. I think that's off the table. But I think if one of them is going to, it's going to be Calvin Ridley.
I was going to say exactly the opposite. I think it's going to be Christian Kirk. Mm-hmm. I think that Kirk has earned the rapport and the trust developing with Trevor Lawrence, and I think that he's going to be the go-to option in this offense. I think Calvin Ridley is very talented, but he's already – was he 28, 29? He's 28. He'll be 28 or 29 this coming December, you know, towards the end of the season. He's getting up there. He's had one season of over 64 receptions in his career.
Sure.
And that was opposite Julio Jones. So I just don't see him being the guy that overtakes Christian Kirk with the money, the commitment, the time that he's been building with Trevor Lawrence in that offense. I really feel like Christian Kirk's going to be the default wide receiver one, while Calvin Ridley's a 1B. But these guys, I think both, any given week, you could tell me that one would outscore the other, and I'd probably believe it. Sure. So it's going to, I think it's really going to be split in hairs, but I lean Christian Kirk if I'm choosing between the two.
Yep. And that's fair. Here's the reason I'm saying Ridley over Kirk is because, dude, he's rested. The dude hasn't played in a year and a half. He was in a bad place. He was in a bad place, but his body's not as beat up as it was when he was last season in Atlanta, where he only played 5 games and he couldn't stay. Like, he just simply couldn't stay on the field. And then you read that piece that he wrote for the Players Tribune and how he's being forced and pushed back. And instantly in Jacksonville, he felt like he was in a better place. And we've read, at least I read this offseason, about Jacksonville didn't have any significant injuries all season. They barely had players miss time because their training staff is so good. Look, Calvin Ridley is an explosive talent. We know this. We know how talented he is in around the ball. He's a great route runner. If he can stay on the field, I think he's a top 10 wide receiver. And I could see Kirk being in that 10, 11, 12 range somewhere.
We have very similar outlooks for the ceiling of this passing attack. That's kind of my big takeaway here from what we're talking about. And I really do feel like it's split in hairs between these two wide receivers in terms of what they could possibly produce in this offense. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. Now, I the only caveat I'll say, and then we move on, is he rested or is he rusty?
That's a fair point. That is a fair point.
I don't know which one it's going to be. So we'll see what he hits the field. Maybe it takes him a few games to get up to speed. I don't know.
So I want to shout out real quick in the chat. We've got our favorite fantasy football cat, Mr. Scamper, saying good afternoon, guys. Much appreciated. And he says, I think Ridley is going to be a rest versus rust study for the first 4 games. And I think that's very fair. That is very fair.
I did not read your comment before saying that, I promise.
Well, the comment just came up. So after you said it. So there you go. I'm with you there. Now, the last thing, and this is just mostly because this is starting to get ridiculous. John, what the hell is Josh McDaniels doing? Like, is he trying to create New England West in Las Vegas? Now, if you haven't heard, they signed Brian Hoyer to back up Jimmy G. Now, does this mean that they're probably out on a QB in the draft? Because if you're bringing in Hoyer to back up Jimmy G, you're obviously not expecting Jimmy G to back anybody up. It doesn't sound like you're getting a rookie quarterback in the first round.
All right, so here's the thing. I think that that's the surface level thinking around this. Another thing that I will say is there's no guarantee that Brian Hoyer makes the team out of camp. So I think that it's fair that they bring him in for now as being the backup to Jimmy G. I think that's okay as your maybe plan 1A, but maybe plan 1B is we're not ruling out the possibility of us landing a quarterback in the draft or maybe trading from 7 to 3 to get a quarterback in the draft.
Okay. Or what if they go after one of these later round quarterbacks like a Stetson Bennett, Max Duggan? Dude, that would be so Josh McDaniels. To think that he could get this guy. I mean, dude, he reached on Tim Tebow.
If it's Stetson Bennett to the Raiders, like, could you just have more middling quarterbacks with low upside? Like, that just would not surprise me in the least for him to do.
Sure. All right,
John. I will say before we keep going, they're sitting at 7. They talked to Bryce Young at the combine or at his pro day, whatever it is. They're also inviting Bryce Young in for a top 30 visit. So they're doing their homework extensively on these top quarterbacks, which any good organization would do. You're going to do your due diligence and make sure that you have all the information that you want to be able to make decisions if they present themselves to you, right?
Right.
We've talked about it multiple times on the show. I feel like every time we do a mock draft of the NFL draft, I have the Raiders trading up to take a quarterback because they're sitting at 7. They're like really close. They're within striking distance of getting one of these top guys. We know the Cardinals are at 3. Is that the trade partner? 7 to 3 doesn't require a ton of compensation to make that change happen.
Right.
If Anthony Richardson surprisingly goes at 1 or 2, and you're telling me either Stroud or Young is available on the board at 3, I have to feel like the Raiders are picking up that phone and calling and being like, okay, if one of the top 2 guys, in my opinion and most opinion, somehow falls to 3 and they're sitting there on the board, I feel like the Raiders are one of a handful of teams that'll be on the phone with the Cardinals to try and get the deal done.
And I think that's fair. Again, who knows? I'm really excited for day one of the draft. I think we're gonna see a lot of crazy stuff happen. So now, guys, we are going to move on to talk about some of these rookies in this rookie class. And we've talked ad nauseum about guys like Anthony Richardson, Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, Will Levis. We've talked a little bit about Hendon Hooker. Let's start with quarterbacks.
Yeah, man.
This isn't an especially deep quarterback class, but they never really are, right? Like, you've got your top four or five guys that are going to make an impact. The rest tend to be backups. Now, some of the names on this list that I've got here, the top 12 guys, we've got the two I'm most excited about are Max Duggan and Stetson Bennett. Stetson Bennett, mostly, he won a national championship, you know, and you can't deny that he played very well in that Todd Monken offense in Georgia. The age is a little bit of a concern, but I don't know that I care so much about that when it comes to a quarterback coming into the league. It's not Chris Winkie, right? He's not 28 years old. So it's not like he's had this long journey in college where you're concerned about it. Are there any other guys on this list here, John, that pop to you that make you think this guy could have a chance at being like the Brock Purdy, where he goes in like the sixth or seventh round and he just lights the world on fire?
I'll tell you, I think if anyone's going to do it, it is going to be Stetson.
Same.
That's my opinion. And I feel like he gets a lot of really bad rap in Dynasty Twitter. You know, people are making fun of his age and stuff like that. And I get it. I mean, it's low hanging fruit. It's easy to poke fun at his age. Right. Hell, I've done it on Twitter because it's sometimes funny to look at his age and compare it to other guys in the NFL. It's like Stetson Bennett's only like a year and a half younger than Lamar Jackson or something like that. But what he did in that offense was really promising. His 2 years as a starter. Let me see if I can get an average really quick.
I mean, pretty impressive completion percentages in the 60s.
Yeah, in the 60s. He's around a 66 completion percentage over his 2 years as a starter in Georgia. This last year, he had 455 passing attempts, which is an insane number. It's incredibly high. Yeah. And he completed 68.1% of his passes for 4,128 yards. 27 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. That's just kind of who he is. Those are the numbers that he posted 2 years in a row, almost identically in terms of touchdown to interception ratio. He's a good processor. I think he's better at completing the deep pass than people want to give him credit for. I think when he showed up at the combine and they were doing the on-field drills, Will Levis is sitting out there like slicking his hair back and like winking at the camera and at the coaches and all that stuff. Stetson Bennett looked better than him in the deep throwing drills. Like, he's out there and he's just laying it up in these beautiful deep passes. And Will Levis, I think, is a lot of bark and no bite, if I'm being like perfectly honest. I don't really see it.
You're not alone. Every show I listen to, anything that I read about Will Levis is overrated for the most part. Here's something that
real quick before we go on Stetson, I just want to point out, I feel like Will Levis right now is tumbling on draft boards. Like everything that you're reading and hearing from all the top guys is saying that he is bombing his interviews. Teams aren't impressed. This is a guy that was projected. Oh my God. It just sounded like Chris Collinsworth. Here's a guy who was projected to go as a top five draft pick as of a month ago. And now people are saying he might fall out of the first. So what happens with Will Levis is going to be a massive storyline, I feel like, during the NFL draft. And it's even more reason why I feel like we could have a trade to the Cardinals at three. Because if teams aren't in love with Levis, then you have three quarterbacks in this class that are worthy of a first-round grade, an early first-round grade. We're here in Hendon Hooker might sneak into the late first. But an early first-round grade, you just have Anthony Richardson, Bryce Young, CJ Stroud. So whichever one of them is available at three to the Cardinals to me are in prime position to trade that pick for a pretty decent haul. And if it's even just the Colts coming up one spot to make sure they get their guy, I could see that happening. So,
well, you don't think they're just going to ride with Gardner Minshew, John? How disrespectful to Gardner. That sweet, sweet mullet, man. Come on now. Now I just want to say this real quick about Stetson Bennett. He looks like he's a slow white guy, right? He had 259 rushing yards his junior season. He had 205 rushing yards his senior season.
And so I want to point out to the people that aren't familiar, rushing yard stats in college take into account lost yardage for sacks.
Yes. So those are pretty impressive. That's a pretty impressive number for a dude at Georgia who's in a pass first offense.
Yep.
Now, what about Max Duggan? Because he led a pretty talented TCU team. He made Quentin Johnson look really good. I mean, I know he's not the sexy pick, but is he a guy that you could see going in the later round, like a fourth, fifth round pick, where he gets an opportunity to make an impact because of injury and all of a sudden he finds himself a starter?
I think if anyone is going to follow the Brock Purdy route, it's Max Duggan, which is a late round pick that needs things to break right for him. Because that's what it was for Brock Purdy. Right. He needed a lot of stuff to go right for him to get a shot. And then he got on the field and then he looked good. And now we're talking about, well, hell, he's their starter going into next season. That's sure what it sounds like right now coming out of San Francisco.
Very much.
If anyone's going to follow that specific route, I'm thinking it's Max Duggan, who's like, he's your player. You know, he's the gritty quarterback, like the Josh Allen quarterback that is like, my body be damned. I'm going to tuck this thing and go bang off three defenders and fight my way for a first. Like, that's who Max Duggan is, in my opinion. So I don't hate him. I like him. If you're in deep rookie drafts where you have like a fourth or a fifth round of rookie draft picks, spend one on Max Duggan. You can never have too many quarterbacks in a super flex league. And he's a guy that, given the opportunity, could absolutely come in, win the affection of a team, which is what Brock Purdy's teammates did, right? Like, he comes in and he's balling, he's laying it all on the field and everyone's loving him, and like all the momentum is behind him. It's same thing with Taylor Heinicke up in Washington. Same thing when he got the opportunity this last year, his teammates were in love with him. That's the kind of thing that I think could happen to Max Duggan if he's ever put into a position where he's starting. So yeah, use a late round draft pick on Max Duggan. Absolutely.
Well, I'm looking at his college stats right now. 4-year starter at TCU. He didn't throw a lot his first three seasons. He had 339 pass attempts his freshman year, but then sophomore, junior, he was under 250 both seasons. But in those seasons, he had 555 and 526 rushing yards. Then he had 352 his junior season. Then the senior season, there was this switch in the offense. Played 15 games, threw the ball 419 times, had 36, almost 3,700 yards, 32 touchdowns, 8 picks, 423 rushing yards. So he kept that up.
Yeah.
This is a guy I could see succeeding in the NFL at that skill set, especially with his move towards the more mobile type quarterback.
Yeah.
He could be a steal for a team in the fifth, sixth, or seventh round where you see this guy go, maybe like the Russell Wilson arc, where it's like, this guy's fairly mobile. We don't want him running a ton at the NFL level because of his size, but we know he can be mobile and he can plug into an offense. I mean, 6'2", 207. He could beef up a little bit. He'll probably have to beef up a little bit coming into the NFL, but 6'2 is not a bad height for a quarterback.
No, it's not. I agree with you completely. I think that he's a gritty competitor who can make some good throws, sometimes struggles with decision-making. But I think there's going to be a team that loves that grit. I think there's going to be a team potentially early on day three that wants to use a pick on him to get him in there as a backup and then see what they have. And honestly, TCU, their offense before this last year, they really didn't have much for him to be throwing to. So then all of a sudden you give him Quentin Johnston and Savion Williamson or Williams. And all of a sudden you have two big physical wide receivers that he can go throw some jump balls to. And he excelled in doing that. So maybe you get him in there. You know what just screams like a fit, and I would hate it, but it's Tennessee. Like, I know they just used a pick last year on Malik, but like, that's the kind of thing that would make sense. You want to take a late round guy and add someone to your room? Seems like a Tennessee thing to do. So some team that wants to add depth is going to add Max Duggan. And then who knows, maybe he wins a job. Maybe it takes an injury, but he finally gets on the field.
Here's an interesting scenario. I want to see what you think about this. Max Duggan to the Broncos to back up Russell Wilson. Cause we know Russell's probably got what, 2, 3, 4, maybe 4 max seasons left in a Sean Payton offense with that Drew Brees adjacent type skill set. And we saw how good Drew Brees was with Sean Payton. give him a couple of years behind Russell Wilson to learn the offense, learn the league, get more accustomed to it, bulk up a little bit. I would like that landing spot as well. Tennessee is probably better in the like short term to get him on the field for fantasy purposes. But I think long term, Dugan could be a guy who could be successful in Denver. And especially if you look at the younger weapons they have in that offense, he can grow with these guys once Russell Wilson is on his way out. Because you've got Jerry Jeudy. He's only going into his third season.
Yeah,
Cortland Sutton's going into his fourth season. They're likely going to go after a wide receiver somewhere in this draft. We've been hearing
they have to. They need youth in that room.
And they need youth at, they're going to need youth at running back, because we don't know if Javonte Williams is ever going to be 100% again after that knee injury. I know it broke my heart to see that happen to such a talented back. They're going to have to get younger at these positions. So why not bring in a guy like Dugan who can be a project guy for two or three seasons? And then if Russell Wilson sucks, and if he's just absolutely horrible, like he very well could be, maybe Sean Payton can't fix him. He can pivot to Dugan. He's got his guy already.
That would be a hell of a choice to pivot from Russell Wilson to Max Dugan. But I can see it. I think there's going to be a team. I'm gonna like call my shot, and I'm going to say that Max Dugan is a fifth-round pick.
Okay.
That's the round that I think that he's going to go on. I think there's going to be a team there that doesn't feel quite settled in their quarterback room, but they're okay with what they have. But they think, hey, we can take a chance on this guy, bringing him into the room, see if he can compete, and see what we have. So I'm going to say Max Dugan goes in the fifth. And I think that the team that drafts him is going to love him, because he is just a gritty, hard-nosed quarterback that puts his body on the line. I think his teammates would love that.
I was just going to say that. He's that type of quarterback you bring in for locker room morale, because the guy is just going to fight every single day. One more name I want to bring up. I just want to know if you're in or you're out. Tanner McKee out of Stanford.
Out. That's my initial reaction. I think he goes after Max Dugan. I think he's potentially a seventh-round pick. I think he's a kind of perennial backup is what he looks like to me.
I don't understand
long and short of it
why he's in a top 12 ranking, to be quite honest with you. You look at his state, 426 passing attempts, but he didn't even clear 3,000 yards, 6.92 yards per attempt, under 65% completion percentage. He only had 13 touchdowns to 8 interceptions, and he had negative 90 rushing yards. So the guy isn't even mobile.
Like I said, rushing yards include sacks, but this
is what I'm saying.
Sometimes going from the NFL to looking at college stats and being like, holy shit, that guy had 250 negative rushing yards. Yeah, that's because he got sacked a ton, and that can happen in college.
No, but this is what I'm saying, is that he there was no other rushing production. He was just getting his ass sacked all the time.
Right.
So, and that's concerning to me as well.
I don't see it. It was Jake from State Farm a few years ago. That's kind of the comp.
Sure.
For me with this guy, he's going to be a perennial backup. I think he'll have a job in the NFL for 6 years as a backup quarterback. And that's kind of what it looks like to me.
But John, Jake Fromm was going to take Josh Allen's job in Buffalo. Don't you remember?
No, but I do remember Jake Fromm taking, who was it? Oh, Justin Fields. Yeah. I remember him taking Justin Fields' job as Georgia.
Oh boy. All right. So now let's start talking about these running backs. We have a few more names to talk about here. Obviously, again, we've got these top tier guys everyone's talking about: Bijan, Jameer, Zach Charbonnet. We've even talked about some deeper guys like Kendre Miller, Roshan Johnson. But Israel Abanaconda, the guy is flying up people's boards. Dude is just ultra talented. Plus, I really love his last name. We did a show with Herms. Everyone knows C.H. Herms. They're over at Draft Sharks. Go check them out. He's great mind in this space. His headline for the show was, Abanaconda don't want none unless – or wait. Never mind. I'm fucking it up. But it was something with Anaconda, right? That got me on the train. Abanaconda
don't want none unless you got buns,
son. See, I should never be allowed to rap. The rankings I'm looking at now have him at 5. All the way up to the number 5 running back in this class, and just behind Roshan Johnson at 4. And John, I honestly cannot say that I necessarily disagree with this. I would probably have Tyjae Spears at 6 behind Abanaconda. Then we've got Kendre Miller, Bigsby, Achane, Zach Evans, some of these guys. I think most of these guys we know are going to go in the first three rounds, right? Like, it's pretty much, and these guys are all guys that are going to have a role. Some names that I've seen going earlier in drafts that I don't understand, Chase Brown out of Illinois. My boy Seth loves Chase Brown. I don't see it. I don't get it.
I do like Chase Brown, but I would prefer Izzy Abanaconda over Chase.
Sure. I think Chase Brown is a guy that you draft and you taxi. He's not going to be an instant impact running back. He's not going to have enough volume. I mean, this could very well be the Ronald Jones trajectory where he just kicks around for a while. And I feel the same way about Eric Gray. And I've seen him going earlier in some of these drafts, and I just don't see it. I don't see it. And especially because his size plus his 40 time, like that's just a slow 40 time and a small size. If you're not fast, forget it.
Yeah. Eric Gray kind of breaks my heart because I've been on him since he was a freshman at Tennessee. So he was a guy who had a skill set that I really enjoyed when he came into college football. He transferred to Oklahoma, didn't really put it together last year, his first year at Oklahoma. This year he did. His stats looked really good this year at Oklahoma. I still like Eric Gray. I do think he's going to be a later pick. I think he's projected to be a day three draft pick. He's someone that I'll probably take late in some drafts, but I'm not going to take him probably until the third round of rookie drafts. It'd be my guess on Eric Gray. So I do want to talk about Izzy Abanaconda though, because he is really sweet. 5'10", 216 at the combine. I really, really wish that he had ran at the combine if he reportedly has wheels. And when he went to his pro day, he showed that he has wheels. His unofficial 40 time, 4.39. That is cooking. His vert, 41 inches. Broad, 10.8. The dude is athletic and explosive and fast. And honestly, I love RAS, relative athletic score. I think that it's a really great program. I disagree with them, though, in terms of how they have their height situated for the running back position. Because in my opinion, between 5'10 and 5'11 is your sweet spot for running back height. It's not just the taller, the better, like it is with wide receivers.
Right.
So to me, I feel like there's a bell curve a little bit with height at the running back position. If you're 6'2 at running back, I don't really love that because you have a higher pad level and defenders are going to be able to get leverage on you easier. I like my running backs 5'10 to 5'11. Izzy Abanaconda is 5'10 and 1/8, came in at 216 pounds. If you are a BMI person, check. Like, there's your gold standard for BMI at the running back position. And then he comes out with a 41-inch vert, 10'8" broad, 4.39 40. Like, he checked every box that you could want athletically for a running back. And his production matched. At Pitt this last year, he had 1,431 rushing yards and 20 touchdowns. So, yeah, the dude can play. He's a little bit more of like a one-cut running back, but he is downhill with a bunch of momentum behind him and has good agility in the open field. I really like Izzy. I hope he gets straight day two draft cap, and I think that he could really impress people.
Well, like his burst score, 97th percentile. Speed score, 93rd percentile. If you look at his more official 40 time of 4.44, it's still 90th percentile for running backs.
That's fine.
And I mean, really, dude, his stats, like, the guy's a baller. 239 carries, 1,400 yards over 11 games.
6 yards a carry.
6 yards a carry. What more do you want? And he's not an electric pass catcher. He didn't see a ton of volume. But in his junior season, he had 24 catches for 197 yards. So he can do it. They didn't ask him to do it last season, but he can do it. And the best part is, dude, he's just going to be 21. Just barely when the year starts. So this is a guy who's probably got 5 to 6 to 7 productive seasons in him if he lands in the right team. My concern is landing spot. Is he going to get shuffled behind another young running back? He just simply not get opportunity. Our team's looking at him like he is that guy.
I think that he's getting some chatter I think the league circles are definitely talking about him from what I've seen. I agree with you, though. It is a bit perilous. He's not a guy that I'm just willing to go out and like blindly be like, yes, I'm taking this player right now pre-NFL draft, because the draft is going to matter. If he goes late second, early to mid third, that'd be terrific. If you tell me that he falls until the fifth, I could also see it, because it's a really deep running back draft class. So I'm very curious. I'm very curious about him in the NFL draft. And to me, he's kind of right in that tier with Tank Bigsby, Sean Tucker, and him. Like, those three guys are all very similar. I love all of their skill sets. I don't move players like outside of their own tier in my rankings because of what happens in the draft, but inside of a tier, if I like their skill sets and then the draft shows that like Tank Bigsby is going in the late second and Izzy Abanaconda is going in the fifth, okay, I might adjust accordingly because of that. So yeah, I can't wait. There's so many running backs, so many landing spots to check off. We're very curious to see how this is all going to go in 3 weeks from tomorrow, by the way. We're recording this on Wednesday night, April 5th. So 3 weeks from Sunday the 6th or Thursday the 6th, we have the first round of the NFL draft, and it all gets going from there.
I will be on the couch, beer in hand with my wife, with bated breath, waiting to see what happens in this first round. And then, let's be honest, I'm going to spend all day Friday and all day Saturday on this too.
Oh,
it's what we do, right? And even when you get into the seventh round, like seeing Brock Purdy go last is like, wow, okay. Name banked though. Like, I knew who Brock Purdy was coming into the draft. I didn't think he was going to get drafted, honestly. I was surprised to see him go to San Francisco, but it all works out. So one more name I want to bring up, Deuce Vaughn.
Oh, you had to bring up Deuce.
I know. The thing I love his talent. I mean, his metrics aren't especially sexy, I guess. 5'5", 179 pounds. He's a little guy. But we saw Philip Lindsay have two pretty damn good seasons in Denver before he fell off at a very similar size. Do you think Deuce Vaughn could have two, three productive seasons before he moves on to another team draft somebody? I mean, he's going to be a day three pick, right? There's no way he goes day one or day two.
Yeah, there's no chance that he goes there. We have no official metrics for him in terms of running or agility testing. We do have his height, weight, bench, vert, and broad, and it's bad.
His burst score is terrible.
Yeah, I mean, it's not good. And listen, he's a short king, and I want to root for him because of it. He was an electric college football player, and I think that's what he's going to be remembered as.
Yep.
I just don't see an NFL career happening there. 5'5", flat, 5'5", 179. 9'8" broad is super low. The RAS scoring on that has him at a 4.54 out of 10 in terms of his broad jump score. It's not good. I don't see it. I think that his vision and his actual kind of talent at the running back position is good. I think that he sets up defenders well and can leverage defenders really well. But at that size, man, you have to have some elite athleticism to compromise at the NFL level, and he just doesn't have it. So, Deuce Vaughn, great college player. Remember him fondly for it, and don't expect anything at the NFL.
That's Deuce Vaughn, Kansas State legend.
Yes.
There we go. Oh, guys, I want to thank you all so much for tuning in, for listening in, listening to us talk about these rookies. We're going to be back next week, possibly with a special guest, and we're going to have some fun talking about wide receivers and the tight ends, which is going to be fantastic.
I just remembered that I promised braids in my beard and I didn't deliver.
It's all right. I personally forgot. So
all right. On that note, I'll show up next week.
Everybody, shame John for not braiding his beard. Make sure you like and subscribe. Find us on Twitter, and we will see you next week. I stay loose, I stay hype. I stay loose, I stay hype. I stay loose, I stay hype. I could do this all night, 'cause I do.